Good morning, guests. Welcome to our bi-weekly episode podcast of Fixing Healthcare from the Trenches. So today's guest is really a pleasure because he's a fellow orthopedic hand surgeon, a good friend, a fellow innovator, and you're going to get some really interesting pearls from Tyson Cobb. Tyson Cobb, MD, did his undergrad work at Texas A&M. He's a Texas boy all the way. Texas A&M, went to Texas Tech for med school, and then went to Mayo. And you have to correct me, Tyson, but my understanding at Mayo Clinic, prestigious ortho resident, I think you published the most papers of any resident in your 5-year period.
Yeah, so, that's what they tell me, Alex.
And then followed by a very prestigious fellowship with really the one of the real fathers of hand surgery, David Green at Texas UT San Antonio. Big ortho group there. And then I went into practice with a couple things that you can clarify for us. But I know you were in practice a long time in Davenport, Iowa, where you mainly reside. And you've done a lot of amazing things. And now you've kind of branched out a little bit outside of medicine now. And I'm sure you'll be able to tell us about that. So welcome to the show, Tyson.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So tell us what you've been doing lately and maybe some of the transitions away from your practice, which you had told me about.
Yeah, so as you know, there's so many struggles in practice that didn't exist 20 years ago. And I left my group in 2019 after 20 years here in Davenport and just went part-time. So I'm still operate one day a week. And the rest of the time I'm doing real estate investment opportunities. And we do a ton of syndication deals where we basically syndications where you bring a group of people together to buy a very large asset that you couldn't buy otherwise. And it's usually split up with a GP team that does the work and then an LP team who basically bring the capital. So you have your limited partners that are bringing the money and the general partners that are finding the deal structure and everything and doing all the work and taking care of the tenants and the toilets and things like that.
I see. So yeah, distinguish between the, so you're a general partner in most of these deals or limited partner or what's your
both. So both. probably about 50-50 and right. About 40 different deals. And you know, there's only so much time. So
yeah,
the passive income is the stuff that I really enjoy. I have enough time to do the general partner thing, so I do that as well. And you know, I just try to build the limited partner side of it so that you just get more and more passive income as time goes on.
So I guess I was unclear on that. So you are still doing some surgery?
Yeah. Oh, I'm still operating one day a week.
Oh, okay. That's listen, we're not too far away then. I should let people know that you know, you really the epitome of privademia, which for those actually kind of a new term, but there's no reason why you can't do academia and academic practice, right? In a private practice setting, and you've done that. We've been involved in a lot of projects together. So I'm glad you're still doing that because it always, in all honesty, it always makes it a little bit sad when a really skilled clinician, because of the challenges, like you said, about delivering healthcare, completely, you know, walk away from patient care. I honestly feel it's like, wow, you know, we're losing another one. I mean, you know, there's only so many hand surgeons in the world, let alone the U.S., let alone, you know, you're part of the great state of Iowa. And, you know, you have a lot of skills. I should tell people, I mean, you were president of the now called International Wrist Arthroscopy Society. So you and I have partnered a lot on projects for that. And then we had that group together. We came up with a number of patents for trying to improve surgery. But there's no question that that it's become a grind for a lot of people. I think we're lucky, right? We're in the later stages of our practice, but I really feel for some of our colleagues who are going into practice. Maybe you got some pearls in that area. What do you think?
Yeah, so life's so much better for me now, Alex. You know, I work a lot less, I make a lot more, and I pay a lot less in taxes.
Wow.
That's one of the things that real estate can do for you is it can offset a lot of the taxes. You know, people, some people, you know, feel like, well, you know, you're not, you're not paying your dues to society and the community, but that's not true. When I say I'm paying less taxes, that's not true either. What's true is I pay a lot less in personal income taxes, but I pay a ton more in property taxes. So I'm paying probably 1,000-fold in taxes what I used to pay. The difference is it doesn't come out of my pocket. Right. It's generated by the business. So the business, you know, produces that. It's just an expense that, you know, comes off the top. And, you know, the Trumps of the world, for all his faults, he's not a dumb businessman. And so the people that have structured these tax situations know that we produce housing and we create a ton of a revenue flow for the government through through property tax. So it's truly a win-win. I wouldn't be in it right now if it wasn't for that. That was one of the big things that led me into commercial real estate was when I found out how much it changed the taxes that you pay. And the ability to grow your net worth is changed dramatically when you neutralize the taxes.
True. Yeah, that's what a lot of people, you know, you talk about overhead in a practice, right? But people don't realize the biggest overhead, right, is to Uncle Sam.
Right.
And you know, we're obviously all, you know, physicians, clinicians of all types are paying dues in many ways, right, to society with a ton of the free work that we do, you know, and we do it, right? We don't, most people suck it up. You don't, it's one of the few fields, right, where we get paid way after we produce service, you know, it is amazing. You know, it's funny because, as you know, and I know you had some properties here in Miami. I mean, Miami, the rock stars of Miami are actually the real estate people. I mean, here, you know, that is the sexiest thing. And they do very well. I just find it a little bit sad that the kind of work that, you know, like I said, I'm glad you're still practicing, but the work that, that we all do, you know, often isn't valued that much. And, I'm hoping that'll change. I'm hoping that'll change, but I mean, that's why I wrote a book, right? I wanted to bring attention to this problem before, you know, the Tyson Cobbs and Alejandro Badillas of the world decide to, you know, stop completely. And I think that there'll be a day of reckoning and the public will finally say, hey, you know, maybe I should pitch in a little bit for my healthcare as well and not let the insurance companies really who take the bulk of the total assets, right? So so obviously I have my ideas about fixing healthcare, but I really wanted you on the show to hear yours. What would you say your three caveats would be to really change healthcare in the US?
Well, I think one of the things that people don't understand, and you know, you and I were over there seeing it firsthand with EWAS and then IWAS, with all of the innovative techniques that these people across the pond were coming up with.
Yeah.
And then you try to bring them home and you can't do them because the insurance, they don't want to pay for it because it's, you know, experimental. It's just there.
So Dr. Cobb's talking about the wrist arthroscopy, which was started in Europe. So European wrist arthroscopy, and now it's become the international, right? And there's very few Americans involved, probably for that exact reason. And I also think that a lot of us are just overwhelmed with the nonsense that's going on. And then to be innovative is that much more difficult these days. So how would you, what do you think you would try to change that might help that?
Well, just to illustrate it a little bit more, I was speaking to a classmate from medical school some time ago, and I said, why don't you, he's also a hand surgeon. I said, why don't you come to any of the meetings? He said, why would I want to go to the meetings? I said, well, don't you want to learn some new techniques? He said, why would I want to learn new techniques? They don't pay me to do new techniques. I get paid, you know, the same doing the ones that I learned 20 years ago. And that's so true. And it's so sad that our system allows it to, you know, to become that way. So, I mean, I think having a system where you're not incentivized to do better and to create and to be, you know, to innovate, I think it's a terrible setting. So that would definitely be one of the things I would change so that, you know, people are economically incentivized to do good work. And
yeah, that's a tough one, right? I mean, that's a tough one, because most of the stuff that we do when we first comes out, right, there's no code for it. There's no, I'm not sure somebody's put it that well about your colleague from med school. That's a very, I never heard it put that way. Okay. So obviously rewarding innovation. That's one. What else?
Oh, I think we all know that, that we have a middleman, basically the, foxes in the hen house type situation. And, it's just a terrible system.
You can always count on a Texan to give a great metaphor. That's right. So yeah, minimizing role of middleman. Yeah. I actually wrote an article that came out about that recently. I want to try to get it more into popular media, because the problem is a lot of times, you write this stuff and other, colleagues read it, and it's sort of this, bitching episode, right? Rather than being productive. Productive would be, getting this to the public and saying, this is why you're having trouble, right, getting in to see a specialist. This is why, things are the bottleneck. So the middleman, absolutely. So third and final
suggestion. Well, I think physicians need to be in control of their own practice and their own work. And as you know, we basically have to do whatever somebody will approve.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's so incredibly difficult to go down the correct path for a patient, because it takes so much time to just keep appealing these things and keep pushing through for whatever's right. So, if somebody needs, for instance, more hand therapy, and have already met their quota, somebody's got to go to bat for them. And yeah. So, we have to take the time to do that, which, is kind of silly. I mean, if a physician feels like their patient needs more therapy, that should pretty much be the end of it, right?
It's not like a person doesn't have something better to do, right? I mean, now the whole work comp system, that's something else, right? There's certainly, unfortunately, in that case, right, there's some secondary gain motive sometimes, and we need to fix that system. But yeah, the majority of patients, right, who wants to go to therapy? If you're doing it, it's because you really need it, right? And your physician,
right, exactly,
right? Your physician is ordering it. Wow. Well, yeah, that goes to the pre-authorization, right? In a sense,
exactly.
That's a big movement now. Yeah. I think we're making some traction on that, Tyson. I don't know if you some of the stuff I've been reading. I try to keep up with this. There's some light at the end of the tunnel with that. We'll see. Hopefully the incoming administration, it's getting to be pretty clear who that's going to be, and hopefully it'll take an interest in this.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, we definitely need it. You've done a great work improving the awareness, and we just need more of that. We need more people that.
Yeah, but the challenge I have, Tyson, I can tell you, is there's a lot of podcasts out there like this, but sometimes when I've reached out to some of them, there seems to be a lack of collaboration in this, and I don't think we can do it. None of us can do it alone, unless you're the Mahatma Gandhi of medicine and incredibly charismatic. I really struggle with that, and I'm hoping that changes. Because it's going to come from the public. We can kick and scream all we want. The public is going to have to do that. And, we've seen that with, racial injustice. We've seen it, for God's sake, we've seen it. We save the whales, for God. When the public gets behind a movement, it's amazing what can happen. I don't know what it's going to take in healthcare for that. So I'm going to tell you my three really quickly. First one is very similar, which is typical what happens with our guests, right? My first one is we need oversight, not authorization, meaning for that patient that you're talking about who needs therapy, if, Dr. Cobb or Dr. Badia are ordering an inordinate amount of therapy, that somebody needs to look at that and understand why it is, and that's it, but not put hurdles or impediments every step of the way, right, for our staff to spend time on the phone, right? So that's that one. Second one is right clinician at the right time. I think the days of, everybody has to see the gatekeeper. The primary care doctors are too busy trying to keep us healthy, trying to be our family physician. They don't need to see somebody with wrist pain who really needs to see somebody like you, So, you know, let's get the right clinician, right time. And that's what I tried to do, at least with my Ortho Now model. And the last one, very important. I already touched on it. You touched on it, is public education. The public needs to understand what our hurdles and obstacles are before we can actually fix them. Any last thoughts?
Well, I mean, your second one is, it not only has a clinical function from the standpoint of getting the right people, the patients in front of the right people, but there's also a cost effect there, because we see so many of these patients that come in with a CMC right. arthropathy, and they got an MRI. They got an MRI.
An MRI, yeah, yeah.
And yeah. They're like, well, what's the MRI show? Well, it shows the same thing the X-ray shows. You have arthritis. Yeah. In fact, I just had a patient yesterday. Just looked at him on the floor real quickly. Yep, that's arthritis. Just, you know, pretty typical. It's just involves a CMC, and STT looks good. You can take all that, not even spend any money, with just quick fluoro. And he says, well, what about an MRI? I said, what about it? He said, well, should we get one? I said, no. He said, well, what would it show? It'll show arthritis, just like this. But in
tennis elbow, right? Everybody comes in, my friends, you know, very educated people. Many times they, you know, they have, you know, lateral elbow pain. Before even seeing them, you know, you and I know it's probably lateral epicondylitis. An MRI is not going to change that, right? They need a good physical exam. But it's very hard. It's very hard to right this ship. And again, it's about public education. Let the clinician who's going to actually treat you order the right studies. People come in with neck pain. Their hands going numb. I go, it's not. It's from your neck. It's not from your. Oh, do I need an MRI? Yeah, most likely. But let's have the spine specialist see you and determine what kind of sequences they want, whether it's even needed, et cetera. Those are all great points. So, all right, Tyson, thank you. Listen, I am glad you're still with us. I do want to talk to you about the real estate. I'm trying to get through some changes now. Good stuff that's happening with Ortho Now, but I'm definitely I'm ready for that next chapter of my life. So
take a look at our website, timberviewcapital.com. Give me a call.
All right, for the physicians out there, anybody, right? Timberviewcapital.com. Thank you very much, Tyson. For everyone listening, please try to share this and let's get some interest in these simple concepts that Dr. Cobb just brought up about how to fix our healthcare. If we don't share it amongst our circle of friends, people, Tyson was going to bring a cute cat on here to get some interest, a kitty or something, right? But you know, we all need to take some interest. So see you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tyson.
Thank you.